is LBC with Eddie Mair. Call 0345 6060 973.
LBC Friday, 4:15. Simon Marks's American Week.
Eddie, if the Biden administration had a jingle, it is pretty clear what it would be.
The United States is back.
America is back.
America is back.
They're glad America's back.
Every day, everywhere, over the last busy week of international travel, Joe Biden and here at home Kamala Harris have repeated that like a mantra. Throughout his 8-day trip to Europe, the president intimated that the 4 years of the Trump presidency are not only over, but were not much more than a fever that briefly gripped America, from which it is now making a full recovery. He says the same about COVID-19, and we'll get to the veracity of that in a moment. But what to make of Joe Biden's first overseas trip as president, and most notably of all, his face-to-face meeting in Geneva with Vladimir Putin?
There's no substitute, as those of you who have covered me for a while know, for face-to-face dialogue between leaders. None.
The president addressing reporters after that 2.5-hour encounter at the 18th century Villa Lagrange on Wednesday.
President Putin and I had a share unique responsibility to manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable. And we should be able to cooperate where it's in our mutual interest. And where we have differences, I want President Putin to understand why I say what I say and why I do what I do, and how we'll respond to specific kinds of actions that harm America's interest.
Now, let's briefly acknowledge that while the president says there is no substitute for face-to-face dialogue, that is definitely not what Democrats were saying when Donald Trump decided to meet Kim Jong-un of North Korea. And it isn't, as one former top U.S. official pointed out to me this week, what many scholars believe. Chatham House recently published a report questioning whether more dialogue with Vladimir Putin, who has seen every American president since Bill Clinton come and go, is in fact necessarily beneficial. But let's also drill down into what President Biden says he got done in that summit. Yes, the two countries agreed to restore ambassadors in their respective capitals, a pretty basic step when you're seeking a stable, predictable relationship. But they also agreed to begin a new strategic dialogue on arms control, which may eventually give rise to something worthwhile. But what about the fact that President Biden just a few weeks ago affirmed the view that Vladimir Putin is a killer who placed bounties on the heads of American soldiers fighting in Afghanistan, a man whose thugs tried to kill opposition activist Alexei Navalny only last August, have used nerve agents on the streets of Western countries, have spread misinformation in a bid to influence the outcome of not one but now 2 U.S. presidential elections, and whose cyber hackers spent 9 months last year rooting around American government computer systems undetected. Well, on that last issue, President Biden intimated that he read the Russian leader the Riot Act.
I talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructure should be off limits to attack, period, by cyber or any other means. I gave them a list, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, 16 specific entities.
But what if Vladimir Putin sees that list of 16 critical entities in the U.S. and decides it's actually a to-do list for his hackers? Well, the president said then there would be trouble.
I pointed out to him we have significant cyber capability. And he knows it. He doesn't know exactly what it is, but it's significant. And if, in fact, they violate these basic norms, we will respond. Cyber. He knows. In the cyber way.
I think I got it. If President Putin continues his cyber assaults on crucial American infrastructure, Joe Biden will authorize some kind of super-secret, previously undisclosed cyber operation in return. But did he actually make that threat in the meeting? Moments later at the press conference, that suddenly seemed to be in doubt.
No, there were no threats. There were, as a matter of fact, I heard he quoted my mom and quoted other people today. Well, it was very, as we say, which will shock you coming from me, somewhat colloquial. And we talked about basic fundamental things. You know how I am. I explain things based on personal basis. There were no threats, just There's simple assertions made, and no, well, if you do that, then we'll do this, when anything I said.
I see. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin, in his press conference, very much came across like Marcus, that Harry Enfield character who operates a Notting Hill antiques shop called I Saw You Coming. He robustly denied any involvement in cyber attacks, insisting with a straight face that, in fact, the Americans are launching cyber assaults on their own infrastructure as a pretext for blaming Russia. And when it came to American concerns about the state of Russian democracy or the life expectancy of the now jailed Alexei Navalny, he engaged in what the foreign policy community here is dismissing as whataboutism. You talk about Alexei Navalny, I talk about the treatment of Donald Trump's supporters after January's insurrection. Here's one classic exchange from the news conference.
If all of your political opponents are dead, in prison, poison, doesn't that send a message that you do not want a fair political fight?
Well, on the question of who is murdering whom, people rioted and went into the Congress in the US with political demands. And many people were declared as criminals, and they are threatened with imprisonment, and these people were immediately arrested after those events. One of the participants were just shot on the spot. Many countries are going through exactly what we're going through. We sympathize with what was happening in the States, but we do not wish that to happen in Russia.
Nice democracy you've got over there. It would be a shame if anything happened to it. It is easy to dismiss that as another example of Vladimir Putin making an entirely false comparison between events in the US and those in Russia. But he's been at that game for more than 20 years now. It was the hanging chads in Florida at the part of the disputed Bush-Gore presidential election back in the year 2000 that first gave him an opportunity to rubbish American democracy. And he has seized every opportunity to keep at it since then.
Vladimir Putin has been America's ex-boyfriend from hell.
Tom Friedman of the New York Times, one of America's most highly regarded foreign affairs analysts, speaking this week on CNBC.
He just won't go away. We really want to date other people. We really want to focus on China, but he won't go away because his relationship with us, his ability to say, I'm meeting as an equal with the American president, just like my predecessors did, is so important for building his flagging support at home.
So, reporters wonders, why is President Biden convinced that the summit was worthwhile, and why does he believe he made headway with the Russian leader? At the end of an admittedly long week on the road, and yes, he must have been tired, the 78-year-old vowing to lead the world's democracies to victory over autocracy lost his temper in this largely off-mic exchange with CNN's Caitlin Collins.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident change behavior. What the hell? What do you do all the time?
So
when did I say I was confident?
You
I
said in the next 6 months
said,
be able to determine.
What I said was, let's get it straight. I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin
framed? You don't understand that, you're in the wrong business.
She definitely isn't in the wrong business, as her entirely reasonable and pertinent questions demonstrated. By the time he got to the airport to fly home, he apologized for snapping at her. But he then engaged in another broadside at the reporters who were with him on the tarmac.
To be a good reporter, you got to be negative. You got to have a negative view of life, okay? It seems to me, the way you all, you never ask a positive question. Why, in fact, having agreement, we'll find out. We have an agreement to work on a major arms control agreement. We will see whether or not it happens. But what do you, I mean, the thing that always amazed me about the questions, if you were in my position, would you say, well, I don't think, man, anything's going to happen. It's going to be really rough. I think it's going to really be bad. You guarantee nothing happens. You guarantee nothing happens.
And so there's a value
to being realistic and
put on an optimistic front, an optimistic face.
It is not only in relation to Russia that President Biden seems to have been, as he suggested there, putting on an optimistic front. You could argue that's exactly what he's doing with regard to COVID-19. As we've explored before, his administration's approach to the pandemic has been a bit of a yo-yo, upbeat one minute, downbeat the next. In Brussels on Tuesday, he seemed to acknowledge that the country may be in difficulty, the death toll here surpassing a once unimaginable 600,000, and the White House struggling to meet the president's target of getting a first jab into the arms of at least 70% of American adults by Independence Day, July the 4th.
We're still averaging the last 7 days, loss of 370 deaths per day. 370 deaths, that's significantly lower than at the peak, but it's still a real tragedy. That's why I continue to say to America, if you've not been vaccinated, get vaccinated. Get vaccinated as soon as possible. We have more work to do to beat this virus. And now's not the time to let our guard down.
But now is apparently the time to plan a big celebration at the White House on Independence Day, proclaiming the country's liberation from the pandemic. Even though the Delta variant is only just beginning to do its thing here, the president is planning to invite thousands of first responders and emergency workers to the White House for its largest in-person event in months. There will be celebratory fireworks, as there were in New York this week, after Governor Andrew Cuomo dropped all remaining restrictions in the state and declared COVID-19 over.
Life is not about survival. Life is about seeing people. Life is about loving. Life is about celebrating. Life is about enjoying. And now we get back to living in life. The state mandates that have proven right and correct and brought us through this pandemic are relaxed as of today. Effective immediately.
Popular stuff, but a massive hostage to fortune in a state where half the residents are still not fully vaccinated, and there are three of the busiest airports in the country. Who knows, maybe the optimistic front will pan out, but then again, maybe it won't. It's quite a roll of the dice. President Biden reiterated this week that the global stakes for America are now enormously high. As you know, he says democracies all over the world need to come together to prove they've still got it going on.
This is going to be looked at 25 years from now as whether or not we stepped up to the challenge. We have to prove to the world and to our own people that democracy can still prevail against the challenges of our time and deliver for the needs of our people.
But what happens in a democracy where the government does deliver for the needs of the people and lays on enough vaccines, for example, to inoculate the whole population, but a substantial percentage of that population rejects the overture? Democracy, after all, as former President John F. Kennedy famously noted, is a two-way street.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
What on earth would he have made of a situation in which Americans are not stepping up in sufficient numbers to secure the herd immunity that would protect the nation? I also wonder at the end of this American week what on earth Vladimir Putin is making of the gift bestowed upon him by President Biden. In Geneva, Vladimir Putin was handed a pair of the aviator sunglasses that Joe Biden likes to wear, a souvenir of their happy first encounter.
I studied nuclear science. I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher. He wears dark glasses.
We don't know what Vladimir Putin gave Joe Biden in return, but perhaps, Eddie, the aviators are part of that optimistic front the U.S. president is exuding.
The future's so bright. I gotta wear shades.
Simon Marks' American Week back next Friday on LBC at 4:45. Now, the Steve Allen soundbite of the night.
Her name's Hedge Burley. She's called Hedge.
This is LBC. I'm Eddie Mayer.